Hello and welcome to the Paddock Bees podcast. I'm Tim Nash, a beekeeper always wanting to learn more and also the man behind the Paddock Bees account on Instagram. This is a podcast for those who've fallen into the beekeeping trap and want to learn a little bit more from the beekeeping community. Each week, we'll mix up the guests and provide some insights into the world of beekeeping. So sit tight and we'll soon make a start. Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Paddock Bees podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Simon from Simon the Beekeeper. A number of you will be familiar with Simon's business and website as one of the key suppliers to the beekeeping industry. In this episode, we'll be meeting the man behind the business and understanding his journey. I'm excited to hear about this journey and his experiences, so let's get started. Simon, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining.
My pleasure.
So, as per usual, let's go back to the beginning. When did you start beekeeping and what got you initially interested in keeping bees?
Right, that's an interesting question. Well, I can tell you exactly. It all started on June the 30th, 2005, because that is the date of my heart transplant. I was very ill before then, as you can imagine. It was a congenital heart disease that I got from my dad. And prior to that, I was a head of department in a catering college. But due to obviously ill health, I had to take early retirement. And as part of my rehabilitation, I started gardening. I got myself an allotment, and then I got some rescue hens. And I suppose a year later, around about 2006, I'm guessing, I got my first beehive and never looked back, really.
What a story. That's an introduction. What a way to get into it. That's fascinating. So obviously back in 2006, you got your first colony. What's your current colony count? What are you up to now?
Well, I've actually downsized due to work pressures. I've got an interesting variety of hives, which total around about 10. Various different types. I've got a top bar hive, which actually my wife got me onto. That, for those of you who aren't sure what the top bar hive is, it's a very natural way of beekeeping where the bees actually grow their colony horizontally, which is quite natural for them, and they produce all their own wax and comb. Not so productive, but quite a natural way of doing it. I've also got some polystyrene hives, and I've got a wooden hive, and I've also got one of the traditional WBC hives, one of those ones that look like the old type that you see in the old comics, Dennis the Menace, that sort of thing. So I think I've got a total of 10 coming out of the winter.
And what do you enjoy working with most? Obviously, that's quite a variety there. What's your preference out of all of that?
I love it all, really. I like the comparison. If I started with Smith hives, wooden hives, which, once again, they all take what they call a national frame, which I think is important when you start beekeeping to get the right format, because once you choose what kind of frame and hive you use, then you're stuck with it. And in the UK, I think over 80% of beekeepers use national hives, so there is an advantage in going with the norm. That way you can actually acquire bees from other people's hives and also maybe sell them or give them on or all the rest of it to people who have got the same format. So I'd go with national hives. My preference actually is polystyrene. Not everybody's choice. You either love them or hate them. The reason I like those is because they are very well insulated, and I think it's kinder for the bees. And certainly I'm convinced that the bees that I have in polystyrene hives come out of the winter much stronger because they haven't had to keep warm so much.
You make a valid point about the compatibility. I have my hives, they're Langstroths, and when I picked up a swarm last season, I was given a frame of honey just to feed them to get them going. I was like, well, that's never going to work. But there's nothing you can't really sort out with a few cable ties. That's what I learned. Attached a frame to a frame of Langstroth and put it in, and it
It worked. It's a bit botched, but I made it fit. So I think that's a valid point to make sure that anyone looking to get into beekeeping, do your research, make sure that you know what sort of dimensions and wood or poly sort of hive that you want. I think that's key to spend the time to invest looking into that.
Absolutely. You really, before you get your bees, you really got to be talking to a few beekeepers and get their opinions. Certainly, that's the way what I did. I had two really good mentors, which I just followed around. Then I did myself a 1 day course, and then I was searching around for bees, and I ended up having to travel about 2.5 hours because at that particular springtime there were no colonies spare around. I couldn't get any from anywhere, so I ended up getting a small, very, very small colony in a nucleus box, which is the jargon. It's just a very small hive from pest controller, right south east London. I had to go past the Dartford Tunnel from the Midlands. But anyway, that's how the adventure began.
That's a commitment. I was in that neck of the woods, southeast London, before we moved out of town. But yeah, that's a long way to go for some bees. And must have been a fairly nerve-wracking drive back if you weren't really that accustomed to bees and committing to doing a 2 2.5 hour drive to have bees in your boot. That's a good effort.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I'm not the most patient person in the world, and I was just really hankering at the bit to get cracking with these things. And I think, like all beginner beekeepers, you're very nervous, and you make sure you do everything correctly. I made sure they were well ventilated so they don't overheat, and I wore myself. I got a bee suit which I wore in the car in case I had any escapees. I think the complacency comes later when you start getting stung and whatnot, when you don't double check your bee suit, or you don't make sure your bees are adequately fed and that sort of thing. That's when the errors happen.
And so you said you've got 10 hives now. Are most of those all in one apiary, or are they split across a few apiaries?
They're only in one apiary. I did go up to 90 once. When I That's sort of me. I just went off on one. And my particular thing in beekeeping was, the breeding of the bees and the looking after the bees themselves, not so much the wax or the honey side of things. And so my philosophy then was to have these sites 3 miles apart. I started off with introducing the first apiary in my allotment, and introduced honeybees back into my village. I then found that they did rather well. So my approach was to develop new apiaries. That's a beekeeping, a site with more than one beehive on, for those who aren't clued into the jargon again. So I used to use the outskirts of villages to put my bees. And so 3 miles apart. The reason for that being that bees actually memorize a 3 mile radius from their home. So if you move bees, let's say 2 miles away, so if you pick your hive up, block it up, move it 2 miles away, they will actually fly back to its original destination. Incredible creatures. That's one of the things that amazed me. So that's how my empire grew, if you like. And the way that I found my sites was I went onto Google Earth. Simple as that. I knew that they wanted to be out of harm's way. I knew they wanted to be on the edge of woodland, so they'd have some kind of protection. They needed to be south facing and near water. And so I just looked on Google Earth, and then when I found somewhere that I liked the look of, I literally found out who owned the land, usually a farmer, knocked on the door, and without exception, everybody said, "Yeah, fine, it does us a favor." Maybe they wanted some crops that needed pollinating, or certainly they've got an affinity with the country life. So, yeah, go ahead. And I fed them. I actually paid them the historic currency of 1 jar of honey per hive that I put on their land per year. And that's how I did things.
That's fantastic. So you built up to 90. Now you've got those 10. And the apiary, for any of those who follow you on Instagram, it's not only the bees that we often see when you go to that apiary. So I'm going to bring Gino the sheep into the conversation here. And is it Diego an alpaca, or is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're all at. We moved house, and we've got this little. I suppose it's a small holding now in Shropshire. What we've done is rented the field adjacent to our house, and so my wife's always had a passion to own sheep. So one birthday, I got her a couple of Valet Blacknose sheep, which are supposed to be the cutest sheep in the world, which if you've ever seen one or met one, you would confirm that they're just like dogs, really. Very, very friendly, very placid. So, yes, I've got Gino the sheep and his two friends, Edwin and Elton. They are the black-nosed sheep. Then I've got Barney. He's the ram. He's a little, looks like a teddy bear, different breed. And then I've got the three alpacas, who are Diego, Domino, and Dario. So that's our Mottled crew.
I always have a smile when I see them making an appearance on some of your plays. I think that's a great setup. You've got to get past the alpacas and the sheep to get to the bees.
That's right. Well, it works well because alpacas are guard dogs for my chickens. I've got 30 hens, some of them rescue hens, and alpacas, they will go for anything which is a predator. Dogs especially, you know, obviously in the wild it would have been wolves and things like that. They even have a go at my cat Winston if he dares to venture on the field, and so they keep the foxes at bay for the chickens.
So thinking about the beekeeping again, what do you enjoy most about your beekeeping now?
I think I just enjoy understanding them, trying to help them. It's everything, I think. My role model, if you like, when I started off, was a chap called Tony Rossell, who had hundreds and hundreds of hives at one stage. He'd been a beekeeper all his life. Sadly, you know, as he got older, it was more difficult for him to beekeep. So he took a lot of pleasure out of teaching me. And the first thing he said to me was, "You will find that bees are better than us at everything." And I think that's haunted me. That stayed with me. And I think that's the thing. You have a lot of doctors and people like that who go into beekeeping, and I think it's mentally stimulating because it's like a game of chess. You're trying to think of what they're thinking, what they're going to do next. They know what they're going to do, and it's for a reason. And if you don't get it, then you're probably going to suffer. You know, they'll swarm or they'll die or they'll do something. So it's understanding that level of, what's the word, they're social insects, so that they're better than us. They actually don't fall out with each other. They decide what they're going to do as a whole, and they actually do it. There's no messing about, and they're very pragmatic about it, unlike us as well, to a degree of, some would say, sort of ruthless. You know, this time of the year, there are, once again, if you're not a beekeeper, you might be staggered to know that there are actually no male bees alive. We're now entering March, so I'm guessing there'll be no drones hatched. So you can reliably say that there are actually no male bees alive in the UK at the moment, because after the mating season, they're actually starved or killed. They're not allowed back in the hive. That's it, game over. And so that's why they've been around for 13 million years or something like that, a lot longer than we have been, and they're probably going to be here a lot longer after we've all gone as well. I feel privileged to be working with such creatures.
It is fascinating, and there's so much theory to know, and then tying that in with the practical side of things and thinking about how are you going to address the knowledge that you've got, and what are you going to do differently year on year? Are you going to do things differently between each colonies, and understanding each colony will have its own nature as well, and actually the same thing might not work with two different colonies, and that's what I find.
That's right,
amazing.
Side
as well.
By side, I've got them all feeding now, and some of them are taking the candy. Some of them aren't touching it because they'd rather get off their backsides and get on the crocuses and the snowdrops at the moment. They've got different personalities, and once again, I think the sort of genetic mix, you know, how they breed and all the rest of it, just tells the story there. But because there's such a diversity amongst that particular type of bee, Apis mellifera, is why they're so successful.
So turning that question on its head, what do you dislike most about beekeeping?
I think when you overstretch, and that happens to me probably every year, you know, you start off this time of year, the bees are coming out of winter, you've sorted them out, they're all looking good, they're all just waking up. If you're lucky, they're all still alive. And then you've got your plan. So this year I know which hives I'm going to split because they were the good producers last year. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do another top bar hive and do a top bar split, which I've never done before. I think the most annoying thing is come May, you can guarantee it's all going to go wrong because you're tearing around and you haven't got time, or you go on holiday for a week, and then that is obviously going to be the week when they swarm because you haven't checked them. And I think it's like any hobby. If you haven't got the time, if you're overstretched to do it properly, then, you know, you start hating yourself and everything else, and you get grumpy because you're not doing a good job.
Definitely some solid advice there, and a word of warning for those thinking that all you need to do is get your bees, put them in a beehive, and then they'll look after themselves. My brother, he lives out in California, and I had a message from him last night saying, my bees swarmed. And I was like, I'm not surprised. You've done absolutely nothing to prevent it. And then he just showed me a video of them up in the tree. And I think plan is essential. And you touched there on some of your plans for 2021, starting up a new top bar. Are there any other plans that you've got with the other 9 colonies that you're working with?
What am I going to do, really? I don't think so. I think what I'm doing now is just I'm happy looking after my bees. My business has evolved as well. I mean, when I touched upon the fact that I had 90 hives, it sounds very impressive, but it was an absolute nightmare because my business was just starting and taking off about that time. And so, like I say, I had this beautiful plan. In May, the first thing you do when you get to an apiary is you look around the trees to find out where all the swarms are before you even look in the hives, because you know you've not done it properly. My philosophy is I'm in the business of helping bees and helping beekeepers help bees. And that's what the business is all about. And I've just started my new vlogs and blogs and all the rest of it online, because I think there's a need now, since the COVID lockdown, there's an awful lot more than usual beginner beekeepers, and my plan this year is to try and help them. So I've just launched a really good beginner kit for under £200, for example. I want to really encourage, we do encourage schools, and we give them special deals and help where we can. And I think the future is videos and blogs and just basic stuff to try and help them. Beekeeping. That's my plan.
I couldn't agree more, and that's really the motivation for this podcast, to help some of those individuals, but also just highlight people's journey as well. So obviously you mentioned the business a few times. So I had a few questions around that. What drove you to go down the business side of things? And for those who don't know, Simon is not only the beekeeper, but the business is simonthebeekeeper.co.uk, where you can buy a lot of equipment, all of the equipment that you would ever need for your beekeeping. What drove you to start selling equipment and make that transition?
Okay, well, like I say, going back to the time when I was convalescing and I just started beekeeping, probably around about 2008, I think. I, like a lot of people, I suppose, well, at the time, I think clothing, equipment, hives, everything was very expensive, and it was still a niche hobby or pastime. And I couldn't believe how much some of this stuff was. So I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to try and source something and sell it on eBay, basically. And then maybe that'll pay for my beekeeping passion and my seeds for my allotment. So went on the internet. And at the time, I think Alibaba was fairly fresh then. It was a bit of a Wild West type thing, seat of the pants. There was no guarantees or anything. And I thought, well, I can spare £3,000 for this new venture. And I ended up contacting the supplier in Islamabad, actually. And at the time, we had the Taliban kicking off. And it amazed me that this bloke was talking to me about making 500 pairs of gloves while he was being bombed by the Taliban. quite surreal, really. So anyway, these gloves arrived, and at the time they were selling for about over £20 quite often. Good quality, you know, calves hide gloves with canvas sleeves. So I thought, well, I'll sell mine for £12. I bought them for £5, probably £6 if you take all the shipping and the import duties and all the rest of it that I had to teach myself how to do. And then I thought, well, that, you know, I've got a bit of money left. What shall I do? So not only bought some more gloves, but I also extended the repertoire to smokers. That was the second thing. Once again, looked at the, my philosophy has always been, really, if I use it myself and it works, then, and also if I can give people the same quality at a better price than anybody else, then it's bound to be a winner. And so it grew and grew. And from my spare bedroom, the kids had just left home, so I had a spare bedroom. That's where it all started. And here we are now, really, the same thing. All my staff have got the same approach. I make sure they're all people who understand beekeeping. And this year, what, 10, it was our 10th anniversary last year. And this year, we're going to be turning over about £2.5 million.
Wow, what an achievement. That's a fantastic journey. So thinking about this season, what new products can we expect to see this season coming onto the website?
Okay, well, we have just launched our new professional suit range. We do three ranges now. We've got the Buzz Basic range, which is for the occasional beekeeper or guests who want to just visit the hives but don't necessarily want to actually do a lot of beekeeping. Then we've got the Buzz Workwear range, which we do suits and jackets there, and we're probably this year going to sell about 7,000 or 8,000 of those. And I've just launched the Buzz Professional range, which are people who've been beekeeping, usually beekeeping a while, or they've got a bit more cash and they want to get a premier quality suit this season. So I've just done that. That's really taking off. So once again, usually you're looking for a premium suit. You're looking at about £140, £150. We're selling them for £49.99. And we're very pleased. The feedback so far has been great. I touched upon top bar hives. I love developing new products as well. So you were mentioning earlier the fact that with your Langstroth, you know, we're talking about different sizes of frames and what a nuisance it is trying to get them in different hives if you want to transfer them for whatever reason. And so I've designed a top bar hive which is compatible with a national hive. The bars of the frames that rest in the top bar hive actually go into a national hive. So I've done a few things like that, a few tweaks. I've been onto all the YouTubes and the forums about these particular hives, and I've picked up all the good bits. Then I've found a good manufacturer who I've used before, who is prepared to listen to me. And over the internet, we have agreed a product that I've designed. He's actually sent me a sample back over here. I've looked at it. I've said, I do like this, I don't like that. So basically, cutting a long story short, we're now going to be probably in about May time, we'll be launching our new top bar hives, which are UK compatible. What else have we got? We have, at the moment, we're selling no end of feed, all sorts of food. So we've broadened the range on that. I have a design for a new poly hive, which is still on the drawing board. So I'm hoping to launch that next year. What else? I mean, really just responding to, we like to think, if somebody says, well, this is just taking off, why aren't you selling it? Then I do listen. And if I think we can contribute something, then we will actually make it, get it, and sell it.
And I've had a look at your Instagram TV and obviously some of the vlogs and the blogs that you're doing. And I think I want to draw people's attention to that because they're really valuable. And actually, you've been delivering them in a timely manner. So actually, you've released the various videos as and when beekeepers would need to be doing certain things like the apibioxal and thinking about knocking some frames together. And so I would encourage people to spend the time to go and have a look at that. And then the blog can be accessed from the website, which I've had a look at, and I looked at that beginner pack as well. And I think in terms of signposting people to where they can get sound information, I think I would encourage you to go and have a look at that, because as Simon said, he's managed up to 90 colonies. He's currently beekeeping. He's going through this as we're going through it. So Simon, 15 years of beekeeping experience, you must have some good stories in there. Can you pinpoint your funniest story or your favorite experience? What would that be?
Well, I think the one that stands out, not funny at all. The strangest one, had a tragic start, actually. This is going back in about, I don't know, probably 8 or 9 years ago. I got a phone call from the local bee inspector, whom I knew quite well, actually. Very supportive chap. By the way, don't be afraid of bee inspectors. They are here to support you and help you. So if you do get an email or a phone call, don't panic. It's beneficial. Anyway, back to the story. He phoned me up and said, I've just had a phone call from an allotment society who are saying that there's a beehive on their allotment, which has actually absolutely gone berserk. The beekeeper went to feed them, I understood later. It was this time of year, around about April time, I think. And he wandered down the allotment in his vest. It was a nice spring day, no veil, no jacket apparently. And he opened up to feed them. They weren't in the best of moods. Maybe they requeened or something like that, or something wasn't right. And they just went for him, multiple stings, heart attack, and he dropped dead. So these bees were then left particularly aggressive to run riot on the allotment, and nobody could actually get onto the site to do any garden. So the inspector said to me, "Do you want to just have them, take them away, save me a problem? But what I need you to do is promise me that you will actually give a couple of starter hives from any bees that you'll, if you split them, to some beginner beekeepers." I said, "Fine, I'll do that." Took them away. Particularly aggressive. Actually, a friend of mine came with me to help me, who was a beginner beekeeper. So I was sort of taking him under my wing to teach him the fundamentals. He ended up spending a week in bed afterwards because he had multiple stings. And I thought he was wearing the right stuff, but I failed to look after him, unfortunately. I got this hive to a deserted site where they couldn't do any damage. And I thought, well, how I'm going to tackle this is I'm going to split them because they were absolutely massive. They were in a WBC hive. And bearing in mind this is April, I've never heard of this before or since. These bees were actually, I would say there must have been about 70 or 80,000 bees in there. That they were across a brood box and three supers, absolutely stuffed full of bees. So he'd obviously been doing something well. These bees were absolutely prolific, but particularly nasty. So I thought, what I'll do is I'll split them, and then when I'll come back to them and remove all the, because they for those who aren't beekeepers, once again, I'll quickly explain. When you split a hive of bees, then the half without the queen will make another queen, and usually they will make about anywhere between 4 and 8 or 9. What they call queen cells, and the strongest queen will hatch, and she will be the one in charge. The rest will be disposed of. So I thought, well, if I do that, then they'd be more manageable. Anyway, meanwhile, I went away to France for a few days because part of my convalescence was I agreed with a couple of friends. We went to a little village just outside of Annecy, halfway down France near the Alps, and we did a little run. It was like a mini marathon, if you like, round the village. Lovely event. But that was the date when the volcano started erupting in Iceland, if anybody remembers that, and all flights were grounded in Europe, pretty much. So I was stuck in France. Meanwhile, I knew that my bees needed urgent attention. So what we had to do was get into, we rented a car and we drove through two thirds of France, dropped it at the ferry terminal, got over the over to England, rented another car, got to the airport, got into my friend's car from the airport, got back home. I then got changed, went straight out to the beehive in question, knowing that according to my calculations, the queens were going to be hatching. Opened the hive up, and sure enough, the half without the queens, without the queen in it, had produced a staggering 52 queen cells, which I'd never seen anything like it. And they were all in the process of hatching. So if you can imagine, I shook the bees off and I was sat in the front of my van with these two frames. I'd made up some miniature hives called mating hives that I was going to put one queen in each and develop some new colonies from. And as fast as I was, you know, trying to carefully take the queen cells off these frames and put them in the mating hives, they were all hatching and crawling around in the car. And I've never heard of the bleeping that queens make. It's quite a privilege to be able to hear them. The bleeping is the sound that queens make when they are deciding they want to hatch out of their cells, and that informs everybody else, all the workers, that I'm coming out, girls, so look after me, type of thing. But it was just like quite not deafening, but it was all these bleeps going off anywhere. I've never heard it before or since, actually. So that's the story, really. And out of that one beehive, I produced 12 colonies from it in that one season. And the footnote to that story is that the bee inspector, a friend of mine actually, he visited me later on in this. No, it was the following springtime, I think. He visited me to look at my bees, and we went to the same site where a lot of the descendants were from this, what I call them, my killer bees. And he said, I've never before had to abandon an inspection, because they were so aggressive that he had to sit in his car and take some antihistamines. And he said to me, he said, look, I should never really have let you take those bees, because they should have been destroyed. Personally, it may sound a bit masochistic, but it didn't bother me, because my main concern was the fact that these girls were, I'd never had bees so prolific in all my life, and they just went berserk. They were so industrious, but they had the attitude with it. I do get stung, but then if I get stung, I blame myself and not the bees. It's just that I haven't been wrapped up enough. So anyway, that's my story about my killer bees.
52 queen cells. That really is prolific.
Unbelievable. I it was my early in my career, and I didn't know how unusual, but I've never heard of anything like that before. Horrific, really. And looking back, yes, maybe I should have requeened a few of the nasty. Obviously, every time you split a beehive, you get a new queen who has mated with different males. And that will affect the characteristic of the workers. And so, you know, I could say probably 50% of the beehives that were descendants were totally different temperament. Some of them, maybe I should have been more ruthless with the rogue queens.
Simon, one of the questions that we like to end with is understanding what your jobs are for the week. What are you going to be doing this
week
for the bees?
Well, this week, I believe this time of the year, unless it's particularly warm, sometimes less is more. I think beekeepers have got to remember that March is probably one of, if not the most months of important months of the year. You have a lot of old bees in there, which are the vital link between the old season and the new season. These bees will have to look after the queen and look after the new brood, and also hit the ground running when all the new flowers come out to do the foraging. So you've really got to help where you can, and sometimes helping is not going through your bees to make sure they're all right. That sounds a bit counterproductive, but what I tend to do is lift the colony up, but leave the floor alone, and actually sweep all the debris and the bees out of the floor and give the floor a good clean, because bees are quite meticulous creatures. And if you can give it a good clean for them, that will save their energy to do other duties. That's the first thing I would do. And while I'm lifting the bees up, that will also tell me how much store they've got there of food. So it will tell me if they're starving or if they're quite okay. So I'm doing two jobs at once. Then I'm going to be replacing the brood boxes with the bees, have a little peep inside, and I'm then going to make sure they've got some food on top, and then make a note. The important thing is you make a note. So, you know, you have your own way of whether you number your hives. I mean, I've got stickers on mine. I've got a couple of ladybirds on one. I've got a dragonfly on the other, these adhesive sticks, something different. And I've got my own records so that I can tell exactly how quick they are strengthening. And also it tells me which ones I'm going to split and all the rest of it. But what my message is, don't go into them unless there's a particular reason. Just to see if the queen is laying. Well, you can see if the queen is laying, because if they're still there and fairly strong, they will have been laying up until recently. Also, what good is it really? Just make sure they're being fed and make a note of how many frames are across, and that's it. And then the next inspection will be, I will be looking at my bees in more detail, probably in about 2 or 3 weeks' time when the weather hopefully warms up a little bit.
We've been talking about feed there, and obviously we're at a time of year when people could be putting a number of different types of feed on. So a lot of people will have had fondant on the bees for them to be feeding on, still a solid feed rather than a liquid feed. But also protein patties as well.
It's all weather dependent. It's an art more than a science, beekeeping. This year, it's starting to warm up, but it's still fairly cool. I mean, the whole idea of it's all food for them, obviously. But if you're putting liquid feed in, you've got to be understanding why you do it at this time of the year. And that is to keep the bees busy and active, foraging or whatever. I think all they want is a quick fix now. So for me, it's still all about fondant feeds. I've got some Candy Pauline on some of mine, there are other brands on the market, but basically it's a food which mimics the bee's natural diet as much as it can do. There's even pollen in there, which, you know, apparently has been proven that it will stimulate the bees to actually get cracking, laying, you know, the queen laying more eggs. So that's what I've got on mine at the moment. And then I would use a thinner syrup through the springtime if I feel it needs. Certainly I'd put something like that on if I was going to split them and, you know, try and strengthen the new colonies up, or if we had a rainy spell.
I wanted just to drive that a little bit more, just because there'll be a number of people. Yeah, we're saying feed, but what does that actually mean? So, Simon, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I've learned so much, and it's really good fun just getting to know the individual behind the website, behind the business. And again, for listeners out there, www.simonthebeekeeper.co.uk. Go and have a look at the products. Have a look at the blog. Have a look at the Instagram page. There's so much great content on there. Simon, thank you so much for joining me today and giving up your time to join us on the Paddock Bees podcast.
Thank you very much, Tim.
All right, everyone. Thanks for taking the time to join me today for the Paddock Bees podcast. I really hope you found it useful. I'd love for you to come back and give me some feedback. So head over to Instagram and send me a direct message, or email me on paddockbees@gmail.com. I want to hear from you. I want to know what you want to hear about. So please don't hesitate to give me your thoughts. Once again, thanks for joining. See you next time. Bye.